This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Bored of too many ads and dull, meaningless chat? We've got neither. Joy Drive, smart, fun radio.
One of the most famous tragedies in modern history, the story of the Titanic and its ill-fated maiden voyage, continues to captivate us more than 110 years since she sank to the bottom of the ocean. And now we have the opportunity to see more than 200 real artifacts that were recovered directly from the wreck site. Titanic, the artifact exhibition, opens at Melbourne Museum. It runs from December 18 through until April 14. And James Penker is an RMS Titanic historian consultant. James, we're really excited. Welcome to Joy Drive.
Thank you so much for having me.
Now, you're an RMS Titanic historian consultant. When did the Titanic first captivate you?
My journey with Titanic began when I was 6 years old. I saw the movie, the James Cameron film, and it was a great movie. My family loved it. But it was actually a 1996 computer game called Titanic Adventure Out of Time that, really kind of, got my interest. And then, believe it or not, it was a field trip to an RMS Titanic Incorporated artifact exhibit in my hometown of Cleveland, Ohio. That was the final straw for me, and then I was hooked from then on.
Now, the ship sank in, I think it was April 15, 1912. What was the world reaction? The reason I ask this is there's a regional city here in Victoria, probably an hour and a half or an hour out of Melbourne, called Ballarat, and there's a memorial that was erected in 1915. To the Titanic bandsmen who continued to play as the ship sank. So if a regional city here is erecting memorials, the world must have just been completely shocked by it.
It really rocked the planet like no story had previously. The best way to describe it to people, because it's hard to understand what kind of news this would be, because the first class passengers aboard Titanic back in 1912, the rich, they were the celebrities of the time. There were no really big movie stars, musicians as we know them today. It was all rich people. They were the beloved celebrities, and there were hundreds of them on board. So what I tell people, at least in the States, and from what I understand you guys were aware of this, a couple years ago when Kobe Bryant, the NBA player, died in that helicopter crash, and it really rocked the world, certainly our country, it would be like that, but with like 50 more Kobe Bryants on board. So it from a celebrity standpoint, really, really shocked people. And then on the flip side, just a few decks below them were some of the poorest people on the planet. And it was the Titanic disaster that made society at the time realize that these poor people who we've been ignoring and that we didn't think of as people, they had lives, they had families, and they lost each other. And it really began a new look at how we treat the misfortunate and whatnot.
Is it true that an iceberg warning was sent? It was relayed to the Titanic, it was the Marconi radio operator at the time was said, "Look, shut up, because I'm doing passenger messages instead."
Yes, of course. Titanic received a whole handful of iceberg warnings, and virtually every single one of them made it to the bridge. One of them did not. Would it have made a difference? I don't know, but the story you're referring to is just a few minutes before the iceberg collision. A nearby ship called the Californian reached out to Titanic, just checking in and to let them know, hey, we're stopped for the night, we're surrounded by ice, have a good night kind of message. And the Titanic operator, John Phillips, was so overwhelmed with work, and because Californian was so close, the sound from its wireless would have really blown out John Phillips' ears. So in a bit of anger, he responded, shut up, I'm working, keep out, old man, as they always referred to each other. And this not only upset John Phillips, but it upset the wireless operator, the Californian. He ended up going to bed after this happened, because it wasn't a great experience. And then just 10, 20 minutes later, Titanic reached out to Californian, hoping to find that wireless operator, but he was asleep.
Oh, no. There's another, I suppose, I don't know if it's a myth or a rumor going around that I wanted to ask you, and that was when the Titanic was built, there was also a sister ship, an identical sister ship that was done, and apparently the Titanic was not ready as such for the maiden voyage, and they quickly swapped names to this sister ship. Is there any truth in that?
Yeah, there's that is one of the most famous Titanic conspiracy theories. If you ever hear of this or a similar one about a coal fire or J.P. Morgan sinking Titanic on purpose, all these conspiracy theories, there is absolutely nothing to them. They're just for fun. In fact, from what I understand, the gentleman who came up with this switch theory, he didn't believe it himself. It was more of an interesting theory, and he has since said that he should have made a screenplay and not a book. It would have been a much more interesting screenplay, and now he's created this monster. But no, Titanic had a sister ship. They were nearly identical. The idea of switching them would be virtually impossible because almost everything aboard Titanic and Olympic, for that matter, had the name of the ship on it, from the chairs to the wall panels. You would have to switch out literally every inch of the ships, and they just wouldn't have gone through that and did not have the time to do that. And we can see the artifacts in the exhibit on display here in Melbourne. They say Titanic. They do not say Olympic. And so we know, pretty sure, they were not switched.
That has been dispelled once and for all. What's it like, James, when you set your eyes on a new artifact that you haven't seen before and you see it for the first time?
It brings me back to when I was on that field trip, honestly. I have a hard time, and I think a lot of people do, have a hard time making this real. We may have been introduced to Titanic through the James Cameron film, which is spectacular. Mm. It may have been this video game that I had as a child, and I know a lot of people played that as well. But to really ground it and remember that these people lived and these people died and they lost family members, and it's a really painful evening. And to see the wreckage not only reminds you that this really happened, but you get to see certain things, like, for example, a chandelier, perhaps, that is a really sturdy, well-made metal chandelier, and it's been torn to pieces by the power of the sinking. And these items sat on the ocean floor for 100 years. It's just, it makes it real, and it never loses its power for me.
We're chatting with James Pinker, RMS Titanic Historian Consultant, as Titanic the Artifact exhibition is on from December 18 at the Melbourne Museum. James, what's the state of the wreck like now? Is it rapidly disintegrating? Have most of the artifacts been salvaged?
The wreck is rapidly disintegrating, much of it due to the natural currents down there. It's not a very hospitable environment, as you can imagine. Human interaction has also hurt in ways, but there's so much down there. There's still so many artifacts down there. What has been brought up, RMST has brought up 5,000 something artifacts, and that's not even scratching the surface. And it's there's so much down there. There's so many stories down there. Over time, these stories will be lost as the wreck sort of falls in on itself or blows away in the current. So yeah, there's still plenty to find.
If we look at the passengers and the crew on board the ship, during the time that it sank, it's these stories that absolutely captivate me. Which stories stand out the most to you?
There's so many stories. Mm. What What is standing out to me currently, these great stories from Titanic, they kind of remind me of like your favorite album. Like, you know, over time it changes, and this week it changes and that week it changes. Right now, what I'm so drawn to are these testimonies from the women aboard Titanic who boarded lifeboats, survived, lost their husbands, and then wrote about it either to a friend in a letter or in a memoir or in a newspaper interview. And the reason that they're sticking with me is I feel like the farther back in history you go, the more transactional marriage appears, and it doesn't feel as love-based as modern marriages can be. And when you read these testimonials, you're reading women saying goodbye to who they describe as their best friend and someone they won't be able to live without. And it's just heartbreaking and beautiful and romantic. And I just love reading their words because it's an incredible moment. And so those are those love stories, the real true love stories of Titanic, are what are sticking with me this month, I guess.
Did James Cameron's 1997 film Titanic, did it do justice to the actual sinking process of the ship?
I think so. I know the movie gets, you know, some eye rolls from certain people. Mm. I think the movie is spectacular. From a historical point of view, it is also absolutely spectacular. The attention to detail is incredible. There are some dramatizations, I suppose, but in terms of Hollywood, it is nothing. I mean, there are some other movies that take other topics in wild directions, so credit to James Cameron for reeling it in a little bit, but there are some things such as third-class passengers being held back by gates, trapped like rats, all that. Mm. That's not how it really went down. Also, this isn't his fault. This is more recent research suggests that when the ship broke in half, the angle of it wasn't that dramatic. I mean, boy, in the movie, the stern is a miles in the air, and the guy falls and hits the propeller, mm-hmm. and we all remember that part. In reality, the ship would have been a much shallower angle, maybe a little less exciting, but again, that's more of like a modern research development.
What impact did the sinking of the Titanic have, I suppose, on ship design and building?
Oh, it was pretty instant. Even the next morning, I believe, or in the immediate days after, at least the Olympic, Titanic sister ship, the crew of the Olympic went on strike and refused to go out on another voyage until lifeboats were added to Olympic for everyone on board. And so instantly, pretty much every ship on the planet had to have lifeboats for everybody, even before the laws were passed for that to actually go into effect. Basically, no one would leave on a ship without lifeboats for everybody. And this actually had a bit of a negative result, because ships were not designed to have that many lifeboats, and it made many of them top-heavy, and that became a whole problem. Pretty much instantly, ships had started having double skins, which basically meant if an iceberg collision happened, right inside the hull would be a second hull, so water would only fill up the hull itself and not get into the ship itself. So yeah, pretty much instantly shipbuilding changed overnight.
There's a story, we can see over 200 artifacts in this exhibition from next week. There's a story behind each artifact, as you mentioned. Is it difficult trying to find out these stories so that they can be told?
Absolutely. And credit to RMS Titanic Incorporated. One of their, you know, missions, one of their purposes is when they recover these artifacts, they try to, certainly find out what have they recovered. But in a lot of cases, it's not quite clear. That they'll recover a purse, for example, a bag that belonged to a female passenger. And they, what we want to do is identify who did this belong to. And let's give someone a story that doesn't have one. So many passengers were lost, and all we have is their name on a passenger list. We may not even know who their family was or where they came from. But if you can find a purse and find in the leather of the purse, you can see, and we've done this, where you see the name of the shop that this purse was purchased, and then you get in contact with the company that still exists to this day, and you can find out who purchased this purse 100 years later and put a name to the artifact. And then you can go into the museum here in Melbourne, and you can see a purse, and you can see a name and maybe a photo of this lost individual.
It's so sad, but I can't wait to see the exhibition. Now, the Grand Staircase has been recreated. How accurate is it?
Oh, it's beautiful. It really takes my breath away every time. Yeah, Titanic nuts, like myself, I suppose. Like, you'll walk in and you may have a eye for detail, and you'll spot one little thing out of place. But no, it is as accurate as you could make it, for this purpose. It is just breathtaking.
Well, James, this has been an absolutely fascinating chat. I can't wait to see the exhibition. Thank you so much for chatting with us on Drive Today.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. That is James Penker, an RMS Titanic historian consultant. Titanic, the Artifact Exhibition opens at the Melbourne Museum. It runs from December 18 through to April 14. For more information, head to museumsvictoria.com.au.
Joy Drive on Joy 94.9 FM in Melbourne, Joy on your digital radio, iHeartRadio, TuneIn.com or the Joy app, no matter where you are.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.